anche l'ha insegnato la filosofia occidentale, richiesto dal Lama, quindi lei provvedeva delle letture sui vari filosofi famosi, greci, romani e così via, occidentali. Lama leggeva queste cose e poi il giorno dopo Jan andava lì a fare delle conversazioni, dibattiti con Lama, che Lama subito ha dimostrato quanto aveva già capito tutto quello che aveva letto. When you taught Lama Western philosophy. E poi, in più, Lama Yeshe aveva veramente un desiderio molto grande di poter avere l'esperienza di insegnare nel sistema universitario degli Stati Uniti. E quindi grazie a Jan ha potuto diventare temporaneamente professore all'Università di California a Santa Cruz e insegnare per un semestre, che ha insegnato i 12 deeds, atti, 12 atti di Buddha. Grazie. E quindi in questo semestre ha una classe di persone che erano veramente molto molto contenti, quindi ci fa molto molto piacere che lei è qua con noi e che parla oggi del buddismo e attivismo sociale. E ha tante cose da dire, quindi io non vi dico.
Testing. Too much testing. Thank you all for being here. In 1954, many of you not born. Oh, but in 1954 I began elementary school. In the United States, 1954 was a great year if you were African American. It was the year that the US Supreme Court decided that separate but equal was not equal.
È stato l'anno in cui la Corte Suprema Americana ha deciso che la separazione e l'eguaglianza non era una eguaglianza.
But beginning school in Alabama, as I did, that simply meant that the state courts went into action to prevent school children from integrating. So 11 years later, when I graduated from high school, I had been taken by bus for the last few years to high school. I was bused 7 miles away to keep integration from becoming a fact, even though it was federal law, not in Alabama. So, when I grew up, it's called, the time period is referred to in American history as the Jim Crow era. Jim Crow. This meant that everything that you know as public was determined by signs. So there were signs over water fountains that said, here, whites can drink. Here, colored can drink. And all children did, so African Americans, even if you had some means, for example, my father had an automobile. We had to keep the windows rolled up. Because some white segregationists would throw, if the windows were down, would throw acid or hot lye in the windows. Because of the 59 Supreme Court ruling, there was an all-out attack against black children. You may have heard of the brutal death of Emmett Till. That occurred in 1955 and was connected with the Supreme Court decision. You don't necessarily connect history this way unless you inhabit an African-American body. But this is how we experienced it. So things were pretty dire. And when I grew up in a mining camp, the camp was divided, not equally, but was divided. Blacks on one side, whites on the other. And we as children were told never to cross that street or we'd get in trouble. But sometimes we had to cross the street. And then we would be called any number of names. It was tough growing up there. But there were some good things. For example, African American students got a dual education. We had no books in our schools. We had secondhand desks. We had crumbling buildings. Yeah. Oh, but we had great teachers. So we would study English literature, and at the same time we'd study black literature. And when I meet people my age, we learn to recite black poetry with physical movements, and we do it exactly the same way whether we're from California or Florida. James Weldon Johnson's The Creation, speaking of God creating the world. We all say, his footsteps hollowed the valleys out and bulged the mountains up. Exactly the same. The other good thing for me was, just after I turned 15, I got to march with the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. All the Montgomery bus boycotts were over. The Montgomery, Alabama boycotts, the bus boycotts. And Dr. King decided that he would bring the civil rights movement to Birmingham, Alabama, the city he called the most segregated city in the South.
Dr. Martin Luther King aveva deciso di utilizzare proprio la parte della città dell'Alabama che era quella che era considerata la, diciamo, la peggiore nel senso che c'era la maggior segregazione razziale.
And he decided to put the children in the forefront of the marches. We children were thrilled. Because we had been experiencing this, you see, for a long time. And we wondered why the rest of the nation wasn't reacting. Dr. King caught a lot of flack for that decision to put children in front. But I think it was the perfect strategy. So the children marched. For 5 or 6 weeks, every day, we had no cars. We didn't graduate from high school and get a car. We might have gotten a watch. Oh, but fortunately, the bus drivers for the school would come to the school and pick us up. Literally, the principal of the school announced, during these times of trial, classes will still be held. But students who decide to go downtown, their absences will not be held against them.
Yes.
So every day, bus drivers come by, going downtown. And we all piled on. I was really afraid of the dogs. And most of my friends went to jail. That was a badge of honor I didn't get. We crowded those jails. You couldn't sit down. Just like slave ships coming over. But this was a joyous packing. I was not arrested, no. I was sorry about that. Sometimes we march with our parents. And I remember my sister and I, and each of us, you marched in twos. So I was holding my dad's hand. My sister was behind holding my mother's hands. So I remember my father's being very brave because when I'd say I'm scared, he'd just say, "Be calm, daughter. Keep marching." Here's a picture of those times. We were right behind this man. This is a very famous picture of the Birmingham days. Please. And I have often asked my father, show him the pictures, and I said, "Dad, you know, we were just behind that man." But we're in none of the photographs. And my father reminds me that, yes, daughter, it's true. We were there. But we weren't there to have our photos taken. Still daddy. Oh. Before anyone marched in Birmingham, we stopped at the 16th Street Baptist Church. That was the staging center. And this is when I learned about nonviolence. Oh, there were a group of elderly black women. We always talk about King, but there was a cadre of women behind King. And also, you should know, if you don't, that Rosa Parks was not just a seamstress who decided to sit down that day in Montgomery. Rosa Parks, that's the name of a woman. She was not just a seamstress who was tired and sat down. She had studied activism. It was a very deliberate choice, very well discussed beforehand. When Rosa Parks died in Detroit in her 90s, she was still doing community organizing. So at the church, at 16th Street Baptist Church, we all had to go in there. So we'd get off the buses from high school, we'd go in there at 16th Street Baptist Church, and then these women would check us out to see whether or not we could march that day. For example, she might say, Joe, you gonna march today? And Joe said, yes ma'am, I'm ready. And she said, no, Joe, I don't think so. You sit over there and work on your Sunday school lesson, boy. This is true. If you weren't ready to be calm, you could not march. This was a movement of non-violent resistance. So we marched for 6 weeks, and then Birmingham decided to open up more public facilities. But that left many white segregationists angry. So that was April and May. In August, there was the March on Washington. And in September, there was the bombing of the 16th Street Baptist Church. And that's when the four black girls were murdered. It's all one arc of time. Few months in Birmingham. Some people think that Buddhism or Dharma practice and activism don't go together. But in my opinion, from the time that Siddhartha Gautama became Buddha, from the time that he stood up, Buddhism became active and engaged. When the Buddha attained enlightenment, it must have felt great. Just imagine. You put down the burden of the I, me. Put it down. It must be hard to stay on the ground, you know, he must have been floating. So the texts say he remained blissed out for 7 days under the Bodhi tree. Blissed out. Then he moved to another tree. Blissed out. And another. 7 trees. Scripture says for 49 days, the Buddha was blissed out. And then he remembered his purpose. And then, fortunately for us, the Buddha stood up and began to go forth to teach the Dharma that he discovered. And because he decided to share it, we know of it today. I tell my students, remember to look at the Buddha's own life. Look at the revolutionary things he did in his time. He admitted all caste. He admitted women into his sangha. He established a fourfold sangha. These were revolutionary for 6th century BC India. Indeed, apart from Mahavir, who the founder of Jainism, who was the only other teacher of his time to allow women to join him, the other famed teachers of the Buddhist time are no longer known. Oh, so when I talk to my students, I ask them sometimes, I say, you might not remember the Buddha's dates or, you know, Ashoka's dates or any of this, but what would be the primary thing you remember about Buddhism? What is Buddhism in a nutshell? Lama Yeshe, Lama Zopa's book, but what is Buddhism in a nutshell? Try to come up with something that's easy for you to remember. I like some verses, for example, in Dhammapada, Dhammapada, I tell them. An example, verse 5. Hatred is never ended by hatred. Hatred is never ended by hatred. Hatred is only ended by love. This is an eternal law. This is Dhamma. Martin Luther King often recited that. And yes, he knew about Gandhi. He knew about Satyagraha. He also studied Buddhism. He studied, in fact, with an African-American religious mystic by the name of Howard Thurman, who taught him about Buddhism.
Lui ha studiato con un mistico religioso
Howard Thurman. Mm. Lovely voice, Howard Thurman. He's published some meditations.
Incredible.
Oh. Other nutshells, the Buddha said, Dhammapada 183. Oh. Buddhism in a nutshell. Do no harm. Practice virtue. Discipline the mind. This is the teaching of all the Buddhas. At the end of his life, in the Mahavagga Sutta, the Buddha says, in these 45 years, I've taught only two things. Suffering and its end. This is a powerful teaching for all human beings. It is not the province of one race or another. In fact, there is not one race. There is only one race. The human race. Any debate here? Okay. Now, I do think these are good summations of the Buddha's teachings, and we obviously don't have time to go through Four Noble Truths, Middle Path, any of that, but we all could. But some people say Buddhism and activism doesn't go together because Buddha should be on their cushions, right? You've probably heard that before. This is what we should be doing. But at the end of his life, the Buddha said to all his monks and to his bhikkhus and bhikkhunis, go forth, O bhikkhus, for the good of the many. For the happiness of the many. Out of compassion for the world. For the benefit, for the good, for the happiness of gods and men, and preach the doctrine that is beautiful in the beginning, beautiful in the middle, and beautiful in the end. Mahavagga. Buddhists were required to spend 3 months of the rainy season in place. The Buddha never said, don't help people. We know that monasteries were the seat of medicine for many, many villages and townships. They were places for counseling. They were not separate from the community of lay people, but actually engaged with them. historically, this has been the way.
Questo, storicamente, è stato così.
The isolation of Buddhists from the community is, I believe, is a result of colonialism and the spread of Christianity, which says monks are over there. They're not really involved in your life. You know, that, and some Buddhists bought that, I guess. It's a long, it's an, I'm sorry, an intricate history. In this day and time, when there's so much to be done, it would do us well to think about Shantideva, Martin Luther King, Thich Nhat Hanh, all those people who see suffering as a peace. That is, not mine, not yours, their suffering. I don't think it serves us well to wait until we are eighth stage bodhisattvas, third stage bodhisattvas.
Non penso che sia una cosa utile per noi aspettare fino al raggiungimento dell'ottavo punto del bodhisattva prima di cominciare a lavorare per gli altri.
Before we begin to work for the wheel and the welfare of human beings and sentient beings. In fact, for the sentient earth we inhabit. Oh, so much to be done. In the U.S., we incarcerate more people than any other place in the world. That's proportional, you know. But we actually incarcerate more people than China and Russia together. American households own more guns. I'm sorry, I'm a teacher, so I'm starting to think of sources to tell you about. Please look at these books. There are any number of good books on incarceration in the U.S., but there's a really good readable book by Brian Stevenson, came out maybe a year or two ago. Brian Stevenson, young black lawyer. His book is called Just Mercy. Just Mercy. He talks about absolutely horrific things going on in the States today. It's a page turner. He writes well. One of the things he points out, though, that's quite shocking even to me, is that one in three black male children will, before they die, become part of the criminal justice system. One in three black male bodies. Today, one in every 15 people you see in America is somehow associated with the criminal justice system. One in 15. So five or six of you would be either in jail or in prison or on probation in America today. And if you go to a prison, you'll see with your own eyes, that the majority of people there are people of color. There are many states that still have laws that say children can be tried as adults. My state is one of them, Florida, Georgia, Mississippi, Louisiana, California. Children can be tried as adults and given indeterminate sentences. They can serve for life for joyriding in a car. Well, that's an example. Yeah. So there's work to do with the criminal justice system. I don't know about here. Really? Well, the little work I've done in prisons, yeah, better not, if you hear that I'm arrested, please get me out. I don't want to be there. I don't want to be there. In prison, you can't open the windows. You can't breathe fresh air. You can't have quiet. There's noise all the time. There's the smell of stale food all the time. There's indiscriminate punishment all the time. And you have no recourse to the law. I've started to go down thinking about prisons, but if you go to prison in America and get out, you are so very likely, 65, 75, 85% likely to come back because rehabilitation has been taken out of the mission statement of most U.S. prisons. It's just meant to be punitive. So I mentioned a little about prisons. One could add to the list. For example, we say that there's now famine in some parts of the world. Drought is a natural phenomenon. Famine is a man-made phenomenon. Bad water. Human beings make that. Not the heavens. That 62 people, wealth, the gap. That 62 people, I didn't finish, it's not your fault. That I started to think that to say that 60, the Davos report, that 62 individuals own as much wealth as one half of the globe's population, that's too obscene to be reality. 62 individuals own as much wealth as 3.5 billion people. Davos report. And yet children go to bed hungry all over the world. These are things we can do something about. I don't think we should wait till we're enlightened. So I wanted to now just say a few words about an issue that's prominent in the States today, especially amongst African Americans. I know you've heard about Orlando, the shootings in Orlando a week or so ago at the gay nightclub in Orlando. It's very hard to bring this talk together. You know, so but I want to mention a phenomenon that seems to be like our civil rights movement, except for the younger generation. It's called a hashtag Black Lives Matter. Hashtag Black Lives Matter.
Okay. Hashtag I diritti dei neri sono importanti.
Do you not hear that? Oh, some know about it. Black Lives
La vita
Because people now have these, with cameras on them, what I, as when people were attacking black children, blacks could say that, but we had no proof. Huh? But about a year ago, in Ferguson, Missouri, a young black male was shot down by policemen. His body was left in the middle of the street for hours. His name was Michael Brown. Now, it's black boys in particular, but black teenagers get shot all the time in America. Otherwise, just one day they disappear and they're in prison. They're in the criminal justice system. But when Michael Brown got shot, there was such a reaction on the part of the other blacks who lived in the town. Blacks all over the U.S. knew there was something more to it. We knew that this was just the tip of the iceberg, and people there had had too much. The thing is that young black males are so frightening, it appears, that there's just no accountability. So Michael Brown, the police who shot him, got off. Then blacks got very agitated, like, enough is enough. Then the police went after a man who ran away from them, and someone filmed the police shooting him in the back several times. Then in Long Island, in New York, Staten Island, big black man on the street, gigantic guy. Was apparently selling single cigarettes. Hey man, you want a cigarette? 20 cents. two policemen approached him. He said, wait a minute, guys, not today. Not today. The fact that he was defiant. Defiant? It was belligerent. The fact that he was saying, no, I'm not going to get arrested today for this. Because he's put his finger up and said, not today. You see, four more policemen go around him. One jump on his back. All six get him on the ground. You see it. Okay, so many stories come to my mind, but at any rate, so there was Michael Brown, Eric Garner, Tamir Rice. This is all within a matter of weeks. Tamir Rice, like every week there would be one and it was filmed. Eric Garner, Tamir Rice was 12 years old. Playing with the gun, play gun. You see a police car roll up, 3 seconds go by. There's a clock on the film. One, two, three, he's dead on the ground. Car pulls up. No, put your hands up, none of that. Just a young boy, dead, 12. So at home, when I heard about Tamir Rice, it was just building up. This is just my personal story. It was building up. It was building up. And it nobody was being held accountable. So this, a movement was started on social media called hashtag Black Lives Matter.
Since a year, yeah, about a year.
Circa un anno fa, più o meno cominciato questo con sui social media, ovvero che quando avvengono questi fatti, se ci sono delle persone che possono riprendere, vengono subito messe in questo social media che è appunto hashtag Black Lives Matter.
Black Lives Matter that focuses on black male bodies, right, was founded by three queer women. Ironic. Okay. There is also, believe it or not, hashtag say her name. Say her name. What is that?
A little bit confused. Believe it or not, I
thought. Oh, no. Okay. In response to the men,
La storia si chiama Dite il suo nome. Mi ha fatto un attimo di confusione dall'asta che era per 10 giorni, perché anche una cosa del genere potrebbe essere possibile. Sai, una roba da non credere, no? It's an almost something like don't believe this. Can you believe it?
Ready? We're serious now. Okay. Say her name uses social media to chronicle whenever black females are brutally treated by U.S. policemen.
Questo social media, appunto, dite il suo nome, è particolarmente per le donne che vengono trattate o brutalizzate dalla polizia.
Some of the victims are 7 years old. Some of the victims are 93 years old. Name after name after name after name after name. So many names that at one point I couldn't move forward. I couldn't move anymore. I couldn't come out of my house. So then I wondered, what can I do about this? You have to do something. Otherwise, you feel hopeless. Are you with me? I've got to lighten this up now. Oh, thank you so much. It's good. I'm good. Thank you. Okay. So I thought, what is it that I can do? Well, I thought, what can I do? What can I do? Well, one of the things I do is write. So one morning, like 2 a.m. or something, I sat down and I wrote this little piece, and it was about Black Lives Matter and how the names keep being added to. And I sent it off to a Buddhist journal, to a friend of mine who's an editor. Before I knew it, social media. I'm not part of that generation. But before I knew it, they had a graphic with the Buddha holding a sign saying, hashtag Black Lives Matter. I said, yes, he would. He'd hold that sign. You know, the piece is not important, but the fact that there was a Buddha there holding that sign, that said a lot. I took Lama Yeshe once to hear Angela Davis speak. Do you know who Angela Davis is? He loved her. Loved her. Oh, I don't know if I can read this now. Okay.
That wasn't for translating.
Okay.
Lama Yeshe used to tell me that I shouldn't hide. He'd say, you should be beautiful in the world and strong. I vividly recall taking him to hear a lecture by Angela Davis once when he was visiting California. Lama Yeshe was visibly excited to see and to hear her speak. Several times during her talk, with clenched fist, he'd say aloud, this is how one ought to be, strong and confident, like this lady, like this lady. And for a number of weeks after that, he would say to me, never as a put down, mind you, but just as a reminder, you should be strong like this woman. You should show your beauty and your strength to the world. Lama called me daughter. I assumed that he called any number of other people, other single women, daughter as well. But I know that he thought of me in some way as being special. His mission was to make me feel that specialness. And to teach me to trust my own power. There is a vast gulf between different and special. My mother had seen me as being different. Lama Yeshe saw me as being special. And special means loved for oneself alone, for one's core, being loved for one's core, which is ultimately pure, wise, compassionate, and powerful. Lama Yeshe knew this about me as he knew it about all beings. And this is what genuine teachers do. They love us without reservation, because they truly see us as precious, each in our own right, nothing less than Buddhas. The wonder is that if someone whom you trust and admire views you in this way,
Se qualcuno nel quale voi avete fiducia vi percepisce in questo modo,
even you begin to feel that way. And with continued reminders, you begin to see yourself in this way. Hope grows when we do things. When we start to do things, community grows. To the extent we give up self, we gain wisdom. To the extent that we give up self, we gain wisdom. Compassion is wisdom in action.
Compassione è la saggezza in azione.
So I invite you all. There is so much to do. A last interesting fact. Many of you probably already know this, but this is a photo taken of Martin Luther King Jr. and Thich Nhat Hanh in 1967, April 4th,
1967.
They knew each other well. And just before, this was taken 1 year exactly to the day he was assassinated. And just after that press conference, the photo is of a press conference, just after that he went next door, Martin Luther King went next door, and delivered one of his best speeches. It was a speech against the U.S. involvement in Vietnam. Just after that photo was snapped. Many, many of the things that I later learned in Buddhism, I had already learned from Martin Luther King. Compassion, nonviolence, interdependence. He talked about it all the time. He too said, suffering is all of a piece. Suffering is all one piece of. So when people gave him a hard time, saying he was diluting the movement by caring about the Vietnamese, people said that. He said that people who don't know why I would care about the Vietnamese and their cause obviously don't understand what I'm about. I think I should quit here. Maybe there are questions and answers. I'd like to. I hope I've said something of benefit. I hope you'll have questions. I don't know if I've run over time. Still some time.
pensare e che sia stato utile in qualche modo. Se ci sono delle domande, per favore, non siate timidi.
She is saying that she was in Chicago just 2 months ago, and then she was invited in the Baptist
church.
Ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
Sentivano imbarazzati a entrare in.
C'è come queste due culture che, come dire, fanno fatica a incontrarsi, no? Mm-hmm. Eppure poi dopo sono stati benissimo, però all'inizio c'è stata questa cosa.
She said that her experience is that when she went to this Baptist church with a group of friends, Buddhist friend. At the beginning, they felt a little embarrassed to go inside, and they didn't feel like to kind of integrate, and they were kind of feeling of separation, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so what is it? She was asking to herself, what is this? This kind of a guilty feeling, or what? Because she was thinking that if you go to the Tibetan Puja, then you feel completely comfortable. Why you don't feel comfortable also in going in another church?
So I can't speak for you. But I call myself a Baptist Buddhist. Baptist Buddhist, but it's not a theological point.
Ma non è un commento teologico questo.
You can't make those religious traditions blend. I call myself that because when I was once on a plane that was going to crash, no doubt about it, I called on both traditions. Mm-hmm. I said, may I never be separated in this life or future lives from Lama Yeshe. And Jesus, please help us now. I said both. So it's a deep response. It just came up at the same time. Lama Yeshe came up first. But I was raised Baptist, so, you know, there's this cultural Baptist thing in me. Right? Yes, please.
Do you know how to operate a little Canon power shot?
Oh. I Have a Dream speech by Martin Luther King? Yeah. What's not often known is that that wasn't the planned speech for that day. Do you know that? Well, it's interesting. In Montgomery, Martin Luther King had just arrived. It was his first church, you know, after he's been called, he's gone to school. He has a little baby girl. He is a new wife, and they go to Montgomery, Alabama, to take on his first church that he's going to be head of, right? It's an interesting layout. If you go to Montgomery, you'll see the Alabama State Archives up on the hill. Then you see Jefferson Davis's house. He was the first president of the Confederacy. Jefferson Davis, right there on the same square. And then there's Dexter Avenue Baptist Church, Martin Luther King's first church. So he's there, and people are organizing for this bus boycott. And they are trying to figure out who would be the best spokesperson to take the lead. And there were any number of women working on this project. What I said earlier, Rosa Parks was not accidental. She had studied in Knoxville a long time for organizing. At any rate, somebody suggested that they might, so two other names were put forth. And then Martin Luther King's name was the third put into nomination for who might be a good spokesperson for this bus boycott. And one of the men said, well, you know, like I haven't heard him preach a lot, but he seems to have a pretty good gift of gab. Yeah, it ended up being Martin Luther King and his speeches. Well, apparently on the DS there at the March in Washington, he had planned a speech, but Mahalia Jackson and some other close friends were there, and Mahalia said to him, Martin, tell him about your dream. Martin, tell him about your dream. Don't use that speech. Tell him about your dream. And then, boom, all this flowed forth. I have a dream one day. You know, and so I don't know it by heart, but it was a beautiful speech. Beautiful speech. And it just came because he'd been talking with close friends about a dream he had about the future for America. When white children and black children, right, would be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro anthem, free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, I'm free at last. Beautiful, huh? Beautiful. Now, Martin Luther King, he had a really, really rough last year. Tavis Smiley has written a book on King's last year. He was under attack because since he came out against the war, then enemies came out at the federal level, you know, real enemies that could really do you some harm. So he was pretty haggard in those last months. And one of the speeches he gave was called The Three Evils of American Society. He gave it in Chicago at a convention. He said, America is plagued by three evils. They are militarism. I want you to listen to this as Buddhist. Militarism and what goes on there. Consumerism and racism. Those three. Racism, ignorance, militarism, hatred, consumerism, greed. Those three. Martin Luther King, 5 or 6 months before he died, he said, all those three. That's the analysis of American society. Those three evils pervade this society. It's so similar to Buddhist, the three that start the whole of samsara going, the root causes. So I don't really see that much of a distinction between actual Dharma practice and activism, because I think activism has to come out of a place of love, that is, anger wears you out too quickly and burns you out. The fuel is much better. Compassion is a much better fuel to keep struggles going. And since freedom is a constant struggle, you know, better to have it be a nonviolent well of goodwill that seeks to make changes that are necessary. What did James Baldwin say? They took James Baldwin away from me. James Baldwin. A thing cannot be changed unless it's faced, right? You will face things that might not be able to change, but they'll definitely not be able to change if you don't face them. All right, we got some issues to face. And one of the things that is going on right now in Buddhist sanghas around the world is this uncomfortable white privilege, unconscious racism, oh, I'm nervous to talk about that kind of feeling that people like me feel like ought to be discussed, because otherwise you're rendering us invisible. So that's a conversation too that's going on now about being a welcoming place. And that has to be faced. Oh, last remark I want to make. Sorry, we've gotten away from interpretation. Sorry. From translation. Oh, sorry. But there's a lot of things you want to pause. Just one thing. I mean, Buddhism says we gain wisdom in three ways, right? Rinpoche said this morning also, we gain wisdom in three ways. One is by studying or hearing about something, right? Then we reflect on it. Then we meditate on it. Then I think we get up and do something about it, you know? So I think it's really important that we keep in touch with what's going on in the world so that we don't become too isolated. You know, all this stuff is happening in the world. It's happening. So we shouldn't, I think, divorce ourselves of it or pretend that it's not happening. And then if it's really hard, then we ought to study about it, I think. We ought to hear, read, study. That's that first wisdom. And then the next one is reflection upon it, and the next one is meditating upon it, and the next one is getting up off that cushion. Getting up. The Buddha stood up. That's what you're going to remember about my talk. The Buddha stood up. All righty then. Thank you.
Questo qua prima
assassinato. E ha scritto un libro che dovreste guardare un attimino dal punto di vista da buddhisti, no? Che dice in America ci sono tre nemici, o tre cose negative, come tre diavoli quasi. Che uno sono la militarizzazione, che possiamo abbinarla al rancore, la collera. Poi c'è il consumismo, che è in relazione all'attaccamento, e la terza è il razzismo, che lo possiamo collegare all'ignoranza. E quindi questi sono tre aspetti, appunto, di cui Martin Luther King parlava continuamente, li possiamo veramente vedere come delle cose che sono non è che dai, sono proprio la rappresentazione del buddismo con una terminologia diversa. E poi sì, poi l'altra cosa che Jan ha detto è che effettivamente il buddismo, come diceva anche il senatore Luce stamattina, bisogna ascoltare l'insegnamento, contemplarlo e meditarlo. Poi, come ultima cosa, assolutamente quello che dobbiamo fare dopo aver ascoltato, contemplato e meditato, dobbiamo alzarci in piedi ed agire e fare qualche cosa, perché il buddismo non deve essere stare seduti sul cuscino a meditare, ma bisogna impegnarsi nel promuovere il benessere degli altri.
My webpage. Joking, I don't like weapons.
Can you talk more about the third point? Standing up and doing something? Can you talk more about that?
What? You mean like what is what to do? In the next few days, I'm talking about the Ganden oral tradition of lamas. I think there's always some group or other doing something. It means more to you if you have some feeling for it, whether it's soup kitchen or teaching someone to read. In other words, I think if you do something, you will find immediately partners and form community. Oh. Yes, I'm saying you have much to offer. Howard Thurman, the mystic that I mentioned, he said famously, well, this is a quote, he said, don't ask what the world needs you to do. Ask what brings you alive and do that. Because what the world needs is for you to come alive.
Yeah. Hashtag Black Lives Matter.
Yeah, has this had some kind of impact in America, especially now that there's still Obama there?
Absolutely. It's the form, it seems to be.
It seems to be the form that the newer generation is using. Too bad we have to keep doing the wheel over and over again. But what we were doing in the 60s is now being done through social media, and it's called hashtag Black Lives Matter. It's quite a movement. And for people who are older like myself, you know, I wonder whether it will have the force that a strong leader, even though we knew he wasn't the only one, still, you know, a leader sort of galvanizes things. And part of social media is that it's leaderless, right? But it's very popular. I mean, all of my students and TV, and the minute something happens, it's posted. So it's very good to use social media this way. And the candidates had to, right? You see, we should pause a minute for the sad state of our elections in the U.S. But, but the candidates had to answer, you know, at various of their campaigns, they had to talk with Black Lives Matter people. Usually those women. Sanders had to talk with them. Hillary had to talk. So they're getting their message out. And lots of young people are tuned into that. Yeah. There's hope. Yeah, yeah. Well, we hope, yeah. Oh, thank you about the election. Pray for us.
They were signing against the will of everybody. Yeah. There were so many signs, I don't know, 50,000 people signed up to this in Europe, and they had to stop it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there is a big hope.
I think there's hope too. Yes.
Because social media,
yeah.
It
is.
Siamo riusciti a bloccare questo diciamo accordo che avrebbe portato i nostri controlli alimentari, diciamo diminuire i nostri controlli alimentari.
Prima si era da soli, adesso siamo
in compagnia. Esatto, prima c'erano dall'alto arrivava la notizia, invece adesso la gente che si ribella e quindi si è bloccato, si è riusciti a bloccare questo accordo.
Big hope. Yes.
purtroppo vedendo un po' le campagne in America dei vari candidati, vedendo come si comporta la Russia, la Cina e come si comportano gli Stati europei nei confronti dei migranti, sono veramente, diciamo, dubbiosa. Abbiamo ancora delle speranze? Allora mi chiedo, quali sono le tue speranze?
I think the answer to why are you hopeful is that to the opposite is no use. It's, you know, it's just, it's not good not to be hopeful. You don't, nothing gets accomplished then.
Speranza di poter fare qualcosa, perché non è l'opposto non serve assolutamente a niente.
Thank you. Oh, question?
No, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Grazie.